Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
It's everybody's favorite time of the week.
It is indeed. It is indeed. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good. I'm excited because we have a yet another special episode to bring today. A little non-traditional episode, you might say. A little sneak attack.
We do. I have to say Christmas has come early for me and for you and for all musical theater fans. And I'm serious. Every year I was always hoping that we would get a book like this. And we got it. And we got it in the summertime. So I'm very happy about that. Go ahead.
Timing. I mean, just being locked down and having, you know, and you're like, what do I want? I want to read words that I feel like I'm with my friends. I want to talk about things that I feel like my friends would talk about. Friends that I don't really have, like, in person. So when you read it, I know I feel, but it's true. Like, you feel like, oh, it's just like, oh, it's so nice.
It is.
Sorry, Rob, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. Please, folks, we are talking about this wonderful new book that just came out. It is called Musical Misfires, Three Decades of Broadway Musical Heartbreak. It is fantastic, and we are lucky enough to have the authors of this wonderful book with us today. Kevin, you want to introduce our two lovely guests? I can't believe we get guests on a Thursday.
I know. This is like a nice treat for our listeners. So we have the two authors of this book, Mark Robinson and Thomas Hischek. So we have them. Mark and Tom are joining us. Say hello, fellas. We are looking at them, and you guys can't see them, but they are together right now, and I see Mark and Tom. So hi, guys. Welcome to our show.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad. And listeners, you may remember Tom before. We've talked to him about some of his other books before, but now we have Mark Robinson with us as well. And we're just so excited to lift up and celebrate this book and encourage our listeners to check it out.
So Thomas, you've been on our wonderful show before, and you were fantastic. And you know, Thomas has done all these amazing encyclopedias, which are, if you don't have them on your bookshelf, what is wrong with you? I'm not going to call you a musical theater fan if you don't have Thomas's books on your shelves. But Mark, you're a newbie to this. So Mark, tell us a little bit about your blog. I hope that's the right term, or website that Mark runs, which is just an absolute wonderful resource for musical theater fans. So Mark, tell us a little bit about that first.
Well, it's markrobinsonwrites.com, and actually the impetus behind that website was Robbie Rozelle from Broadway Records and, you know, Songs Inside My Locker, and he and I have been friends for many, many years, and I started out by just writing little blurbs on Facebook about shows, and actually I started out just writing about individual songs, and he said, you know, we really should put together a website for you and get you writing about, you know, musicals in a more formal format, although I wouldn't call it formal. I think it's kind of straddles between fun and formal, but so I've been doing that for five years. Been writing articles about all things Broadway related, musicals mostly, and old shows, new shows. But my particular area that I love are the shows that misfired, the ones that didn't run.
Yeah.
So gentlemen, why do you think that musical theater fans and aficionados sort of gravitate towards these shows that were not as successful as, say, Hamilton or Book of Mormon or Carousel? Why do we gravitate towards that?
Yeah. So true.
Sure. Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. I think, first of all, in any season of Broadway, you have maybe two, possibly three big hits that are remembered and carry on. And we hear those shows over and over again, but we're always, you know, kind of salivating at the opportunity to hear other things. And I think these things are kind of fun to discover. I think that's why people maybe, you know, gravitate towards the idea of researching them and digging in and listening to those scores and finding songs that might make a great audition song, or, you know, something that they haven't heard before and are like, oh, this is great music. Because let's face it, even though a show fails to run or fails to make money, there's all this great music usually in it that is worth remembering. And when mm-hmm. people discover it, they like to hear it. And they also like to dissect it and try to figure out why it didn't work. And I think that's another appeal to people, is to have that discussion.
That's a really good answer.
A lot of shows are not obscure musicals that no one has heard of. Some of them are very well-known musicals. They just didn't make enough money to be put into the, you know, to the column of hits. And in some cases, like a show like Seussical, which is so popular all over the country, that is considered a Broadway flop. We don't use the word flops. We don't like that word. But it did not make money. And it toured and made a little more money, but it's done all the time now. Yeah. And shows like that, you know, are not being ignored, but there are a lot of shows that are almost as good that are being ignored. And so that's part of our thing is, you know, just because a show isn't famous and didn't run long, there's some great shows in there. And that's why we use the word misfire, because it doesn't judge quality. It's about, you know, whether it hit the bullseye for cash or not. And boy, there's wonderful stuff that we've visited.
And in this book, how many individual musicals do you discuss?
151.
151. And it goes from 1989, is that correct?
89 until March 8th of last year, of this year.
Of this year, yeah.
And so I'm assuming that both of you saw many of these productions. Is that correct?
Out of 151, no, because there's some there that really were short runs. Mm-hmm. And neither Mark lived in New York for a while, and I live close to New York. But some of these things ran, you know, a week or two. But between the two of us, it was a good number that we had seen.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I do have to ask you, I'm sure it's like picking a favorite child, but which of these in this book is your favorite misfire?
Oh, Mark has a favorite.
Well, Mark has a favorite.
My favorite is Nick and Nora, and there's a reason for that. When I was just getting out of high school and going into college, it was 1991, and Nick and Nora was being talked about. It was at one point the only new musical announced for that season, although other ones came in later. And I had been following Nick and Nora for a few years before that. I'd kept a scrapbook on it because I love Joanna Gleason, and anything Joanna Gleason does, I'm just obsessed with. And so Nick and Nora to me was such an exciting to becoming, on top of the fact that, you know, it was based on, you know, these great characters, you know, of the Thin Man movies and books. And so I became obsessed with Nick and Nora. I wanted to learn everything I could about it. And I collected every review, read every article about it. I've interviewed cast members to talk to them, you know, specifically about the show and, you know, what they saw and, you know, if they, you know, thought it could be fixed. So if you'll notice in the book, there is the one chapter that is all devoted to Nick and Nora. And
chapter one. Yeah.
I wanted to show that could exemplify what just can go wrong with a Broadway musical. And Nick and Nora is such a smorgasbord of opportunities to discuss how many different ways a show can misfire.
Right. That's, and especially great, with so many legends attached to it as well. Were there any surprises that in your research? Cause you both have such an exhaustive knowledge of musical theater as is before writing this book. Did you uncover anything in your treasure hunting and finding things that were really remarkable or surprising?
I think I found musicals that closed and I finally listened to them. And when I listened to the CD, I was like, this sounds great. You know, didn't see it. Didn't run very long. A good example is Caroline or Change.
My favorite.
There's a movie, you know, that was like unbelievable. And it was gone by the, well, the CD didn't come out till I think after the show had closed. Mm-hmm. And when I listened to that, it was like, how could this not, you know, succeed? It just, it's one of the best things, you know, written on, you know, in that era. So yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah, totally.
I think too, some of the surprises came from, musicals that we'd barely even heard of. Like they were on our, you know, they were on our radar, but barely, you know, musicals such as Metro, which was a musical that came from Poland in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And so much of it seems like a precursor to Rent because half the story and plot seem like they match up with Rent. But I found a cast album of it that had been recorded, in Poland with a Polish cast, but it was in English. And I was able to listen to the music and I'm like, this is kind of fun, interesting music. I don't think it was, bowl you over amazing, but it was definitely refreshing and different, particularly for the time that it landed on Broadway. Yeah. And
it was before Rent.
And we forget that. I mean, I remember reading about Metro, but now I want to go back and dig now or read it in the book again.
Or what about a Change in the Air?
Yeah.
Oh, the old Change in the Air, like H-E-I-R. I love that one.
The only reason it kind of stuck in my mind is I recognized the name. The lyricist and book writer was somebody I went to college with who I wasn't in touch with. Huh. And this ran so short. It was never recorded. It was done in a tiny little, the Edison Theater, I think it was. And it was even hard finding reviews about it because it just kind of came and went. It had no big names in it. I eventually did get to hear on YouTube, I listened to a couple of songs. But here was a show that nobody remembered. You know, when there's no cast album, it doesn't run long, and there's fewer reviews. You're destined to obscurity. I mean, it really is, and that was probably the most obscure show, because even Robbie, who helped us get this project going, he admitted that was the one show he had never even heard of, you know, no less knew anything about.
Right.
Or another real bizarre surprise was the one about a Jewish rabbi who sang rock songs.
Oh, a Shlomo.
Soul Doctor.
Yes, Soul Doctor. Yeah.
And there's a video of it, and people loved it, and it had a run at the Circle in the Square. But who remembers it except for people who saw it, you know, but when that shows up on the list, Mark and Robbie both is like, was that a musical? I never heard of that, you know? So there are some obscure ones. I think the most heartbreaking ones were, I actually saw it, I thought it was brilliant, and I could tell the audience around me was hating it. Mm-hmm. That's a really hard experience, and I know that it's not going to run, and it's, you know, Sweet Smell of Success is what comes to my mind. Mm. I was just enthralled, and I could tell people were restless, and just didn't get it. A Steel Pier was another one. People were walking out in intermission. What the hell is this show about? I don't understand it. And they were both superior in everything, set. Yeah, yeah. I mean, costumes, script, score, performances. And that really, you know, that hurts me because it's like, I'm enjoying it. I know it's not for everybody, but I'm so old. I sat there during the original production of Follies, and people walked out, and because there was no intermission, they just walked out.
Ooh.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I mean, and I'm there seeing, I think, one of the greatest things I'll ever see in my life, and I still think it is. And there were people picking up their coats and walking over my feet because they heard there was no intermission. They just had enough after an hour. So, you know, Follies is considered a classic now, but at that time it was like, what a dreary musical. Let's get out of here, Mabel, you know?
I felt similarly about Scottsboro Boys, which I saw 5 times during its very short run, but I just kept walking into that theater hoping that the audience around me was going to embrace the show. And yes. I think it was a faction of them that did, but in general, I think most people felt uncomfortable by it and were never going to embrace that show on Broadway, even though I think it was a brilliant piece of musical theater.
Yes,
yeah, that would totally be one of my favorites of the, it did not succeed, but I could see why, you know.
It was right, but it's still so tragic. It's still, because I had the same experience, Mark. I just thought that I was going to church when I went to Scottsboro Boys. And that double disappointment, like a bummed that the, you're like, why aren't you guys getting it? Like, this is, look at this. This is magical.
And Thomas, I had the same experience at Sweet Smell of Success, which was, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And everyone around me looked like they'd rather be anywhere but in that theater at that moment. I could not figure it out for the life of me. Now, what was the litmus test to include a show in this book? What were the qualifications the show had to meet?
Of the year.
Yeah. We didn't want to go by reviews, you know, whether it received well or not, because there's a lot of shows that got lousy reviews and ran for years.
Right.
And of course, there's shows that got very good reviews and didn't run. I was very surprised. A recent case was Groundhog Day got nothing but good reviews, and it just couldn't find an audience. People just didn't want to see it. They liked the movie or whatever. So and then we started looking at money, and money's tricky because today it's so hard to make a profit on Broadway. So it was the combination of how long did it run and still not make money. Then we had to consider it a misfire. And I guess our biggest controversial one was Sunset Boulevard. You know, it ran in 3 cities, won every award, ran for over 2 years on Broadway, but it never made any money. We included it just to show how hard it is for a show to succeed, although nobody would think of that as an unsuccessful show. But when it comes down to the reality of it, and it was, and it's a great story because it shouldn't have been unsuccessful. Management of that show was terrible and the money wasted, and it should have been a profitable long run instead of just an expensive long run.
Yeah.
You know?
And now, what was the impetus for you two to collaborate together and put this book out there?
Right. You mentioned Robbie Rozelle, a good friend of our podcast, of course. Yeah.
I'd say the book Not Since Carrie, a favorite book, but that book is now 30 years old.
Right. And that was, and that took, of course, listeners, I mean, obviously listeners know, but that took the from 1990s and the 40 years before it. I can't remember what the starting date was.
He called it 4 decades. So
yeah, 4 decades.
Going back to the 40s.
Right.
Yeah. And he was, he didn't cover everything, and he didn't spend as much time on each show. But he really did look at them as flops. Only in the last chapter did Ken Mandelbaum, is the person we're talking about, only in the last chapter did he look at the shows that he considered excellent, like Candide and things that flopped. Most of it was him saying how everything was wrong with the show. And we wanted to, we always wish, is he going to write a sequel to that book or is he going to continue it? He never did. And we found out he really wasn't going to do that. We realized that when we looked at it, you can't write that book anymore because now there are so many good shows that fail that you just can't go through and just say, oh, this flop, that flop, that flop, that flop. You know, it got a lot more complicated, but that's the impetus, is to let's bring us up to date. Since 1989.
But we also went into this not wanting to write a negative book. We didn't want the book to just bash these shows and tear them apart. We wanted to look at what also worked, because there's there's a reason why many of them still live on in some way. And we wanted to celebrate as well as dissect, instead of just being, you know, the bearer of bad tidings.
Yeah, sure. Well, anybody could say this wasn't a hit. That was not good. But I do appreciate how you layer in the facts, the information, you know, who wrote it, what year, all that, but you pepper in some commentary as well. I mean, you give us sometimes the plot and all of that, but I do appreciate that you, because sometimes when we have no context to, like, A Change in the Air, for instance, you know, the fact that you did that work, that we can understand the contextual world around it, because not all of these misfires, like you said, are misfires for the same reason, when I think sometimes in the past we sort of write them off, you know, but it's easier to say that's why. I do appreciate all of that work you did to sort of balance, you know what I mean? Like the commentary versus facts.
You used to have shows that could open to mixed reviews. They can run 4 or 5 months. They broke even. Right. And it was all right. You can't do that anymore. You know, a musical, even a small musical, if you can't run at least a year, you know, you're going to lose money. And especially if it's a big musical, and you got to fill a big house, you know, like the Gershwin or something, for 2 or 3 years, you know, all of a sudden the definition of a failure really changes.
Right. Like, is it just only big commercial theater, or is there a world where we are allowed to have these tiny, you're right, we don't have those as much anymore. Sorry, Mark, you were going to say
also something. Going back to Rob's question about the impetus behind this book. Tom and I wrote a book together, 2009, 2010, something like the Disney Song Encyclopedia. And we hadn't done a project together in a while. And we were looking for something that would that appealed to both of us to spend the time again and for another collaboration. And this just seemed ideal. So that was also, you know, us
because we could divide up the work. You know, we're not sitting there together writing a paragraph. We divvy out the shows, put it together, critique each other's, try to make them sound similar.
Yeah.
We had certain guidelines.
When did you first meet? Because now I realize you've been friends for a decade at least. And now I'm like, wait a minute. How did this get started?
Mark was a student of mine at SUNY Cortland in the 90s.
In the 90s, early 1990s. Awesome. Yeah. He was my theater history professor and musical theater history professor. And
lucky.
A couple other things. Acting, I think.
But what's nice is when we do a book like this, my point of view, I'm older and I know the old stuff. Now, in this case, we're only going back to 89. But when we talk about theater or whatever, my framework is one, and I don't know the new stuff, you know. And that's where Mark picks up, you know, and he knows the theater from the 90s on up. So. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's kind of like I can cover half of things that he can't. And this isn't a history book going too far back, but he understands the music of these, you know, something like, you know, Be More Chill or, you know, or American Idiot. Or, sure. And he knows that he grew up with that music. And I didn't. I'm too old for it.
So you're very well balanced. I mean, I've got these
equal jukebox musicals too. Like, he would know that music, you know, and say, oh yeah, they were big in the 80s. They were big in the 90s. You know, this group, this, you know, this person. And to me, you know, I that's not me. I'm Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, and Sondheim. So it's an interesting combination because we're really two different generations completely, you know.
And yet the book doesn't, you meet in the middle, it seems to me, because I don't feel that way. I don't feel like every other chapter or every other, you know, section, it's like, oh, here's Mark's, and here's Tom. You did a really nice job seeing
that as we went along. I'd write it an entry. I would send it to Tom. He would make comments and we kind of would send back and forth to each other. I mean, every entry, I think, went back and forth at least two or three times, just so that we could, you know, get a kind of a feeling that it was
one
voice, you know, voice telling the stories, even though it was, you know.
For example, at the beginning, we said, we are not going to ever use the word flop. We're not going to use the word bomb. We're not going to, you know, we're going to avoid that. We are going to not revel in, you know, how awful a show is, you know, although there's some pretty awful shows in there, let's face it, you know.
I think there's one or two entries where it was very hard for us to, you know,
find something positive to say.
Yeah. And, you know, for the most part, I think, you know, we really tried to, you know, we tried to find something to recommend in each show and what was that stood out or what, even if there wasn't something to stand out, what was the interesting story behind it that made it worth talking about, you know?
Yes, definitely.
So the hope was that as you read chapter to chapter, you didn't feel like you were switching voices, that it sounded the same. And we must have done a pretty good job because when we came to proofing it, you know, a year later, I'm reading and going, did I write this one or did he write this one? I really had forgotten.
That's great.
That's good.
So what's next for you two gentlemen? Will there be another collaboration?
Oh, not right away.
No
pressure. Take a break.
Working on right now.
Yeah.
I just started another book. You're starting another book.
Yeah. So, not musicals. I'm doing a theater book and you're looking at a TV book.
I'm looking at a book on, I'm doing a book on television holiday specials. Everything from like Rudolph to the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown to, I also write about quite a bit about television. My last book, Sit Commentary, was a book about television sitcoms and how they helped evolve America's social views and so everything from like All in the Family to the Golden Girls to all, you know, so TV is kind of also another fascination of mine and especially those holiday specials. I was going to write this book 2 books ago and then got on different projects.
Well, I mean,
and I just love theater, you know, and non-musical theater as well. So I'm doing a book on Thornton Wilder.
Amazing.
Who's not only amazing. A playwright, but a novelist. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting, you know, for me to get away from the musical theater for a while. You know, I'll get back to it.
Well, don't stay away too long because we love these books. So once again, folks, the wonderful book is called Musical Misfires, 3 Decades of Broadway Musical Heartbreak. Kevin and I devoured it. We know you're going to devour it as well. And as the holidays will be coming up quite soon and you always have a theater lover in the family that you want to get a gift for, this should be on their wish list. And if it's not, stick it in their stocking. They'll be very happy that you did. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure. Thomas, it's great to see you again. Mark, it's such an honor to meet you this way. And once again, folks, please buy the book. You can buy it on Amazon. Are there any other great resources or websites, gentlemen, that we should be plugging? Or
Freebie.com. You can get it on Nook through Barnes & Noble.
Anywhere you buy an ebook, you can get it.
And there's also links on our website with more information.
And that website is
ThomasHishak.com and MarkRobinsonWrights.com.
Yeah.
Great. We'll post that as well just to make sure that everybody gets that.
So, folks, if you click on the show's description today, you will see both of their websites, and we'll also include a link for the book so that way you can easily purchase it. Gentlemen, thank you so much for writing this book. It was so badly needed, and I'm so happy that it came out so brilliantly. So thank you both for that.
Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
Yay!
Us too.
All right. Till next time, everybody. Bye-bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical, Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.